All right.
I'm Jack.
And I am Tika. And this is Public Intellectuals Radio's podcast on Lovecraft Country. What episode are we on?
Full Circle. It's number 10. And it's interesting in that I had this idea that they might surprise us with a second season, but just as the title suggests, they've come full circle. They've come to a conclusion, different from the book, but that's their choice.
I mean, the thing is about this show, which I have to say, something about the show that I liked is that that was different from the book, is that I feel like it had a more of a Black perspective than the book. I mean, there were some things about the book, while I liked the book, there were some things about the book I did not like. Hmm. I just felt like he didn't get, well, as regards to the Black experience, I felt what he was doing was very clever, but I felt like there were some things he didn't understand in regards to the Black experience. And so I was glad that Misha was able to correct some things that I thought was, it's just like I said, with the Ruby character and the fact that she wanted to, you know, to be white, that was kind of like, you know, oh, she wanted to be, you know, she viewed herself as, in the book, it was like, oh, I want to be thin, I want to have red hair, and et cetera, et cetera. And that's not really Black girl goals. So it was kind of a weird, like, wow, Black women don't talk like that. That's something that maybe some white women do, but that's just not something a Black woman would do. As a Black woman would do is she became white and immediately tried to get a good job, which was kind of disturbing also, because wow, you know, you get this opportunity and you want to get a job. But I'm going off topic.
We're going off topic, but this is one of the things that Christina also talks about. You know, when you have magic, you can do a whole lot more. But going back to Christina and that kind of comment of hers about, well, you can do a whole lot more. You can do anything. The interesting thing that I thought about Christina and William in the book was is that they start out with this long game approach. They slowly remove their rivals. In the book, they play off the folks in Chicago and basically work them through to destroy them. And then in this book, she goes from someone that is using this long game. She gets Lydia House, which leads to them going on the treasure hunt. This is not a short game. This is not an immediate grab. But at the end, and I'd say that there's another one of these decisions, everyone goes for the short-term grab, and they didn't have to. None of them did.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel as if they felt like, oh, we have to end the show because we said we would end it, so let me just wrap this up. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't feel satisfied with the ending, because actually with a lot of shows, you don't feel satisfied. I have to say, I felt satisfied with this ending, but I just felt like there are certain things that could have been done differently, that I would have done differently. I didn't write this show, but I mean, I felt that the characters were growing and smarter, and if you're a smarter character, you wouldn't have just done the easy way. There were so many options. I mean, if, you know,
big options.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. If someone has access to a multiverse machine, and no one viewed that as an option to go and, oh, you know what? Forget all this. Let's just go.
We're going to Planet 504. Why not take the daughter there, where they have super technology, and they, in some sense, they're using the language of Adam to assert themselves, to play with reality, not just to, oh, I'm invulnerable now. No, they were literally playing with the substance of the universe on that planet. Oh, I lived 200 years and I was gone for 3 days. Wow. And as you said, and no one picked that up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of like, for me, a challenge, because I'm like, okay, you have a time machine, you have all of these things that you could do, and you decide to not do them. And I felt, I don't know, I felt in a way for the whole show, I felt the way I felt when Ruby became a white woman and the first thing she wanted to do was to get a job. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way about this show. It's like, wow, you know, you've been, you know, you get this opportunity to do all these great things and you just get a job. And that's not a negative thing, because we haven't really seen, you know, black people in horror. So in a way, it's kind of like, it's just great that you got, you know, even though certain things are things that you see often, to see it being done with black people is great. And like I said, I don't want to say I was disappointed with the show. I just feel that, to me, African American culture, the diaspora, it's so deep. And there was so, we could have done more than what they would have done if they were a white guy who did it.
Who wrote it, the initial material.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe that was a kind of limitation, because a white guy had written the original material. And so that almost kind of put a limitation on where they could go with it.
I don't know. See, they walked away from the main plot, which was both good and bad. Mm-hmm. The good thing was is that they walked away from some of the limitations that you described of a white man writing African American characters and missing elements of the culture. But there's other things as well, though. Once you really open up all those doors, we're going to walk away from the plot and keep certain parts here. As I said, there's so much more you could have done. There's so much more. Oh, we're in Tulsa. The house is burning. Well, what do you do? Well, what you do is you call up Montrose at the theater and you say, hey, jump through there and tell Hippolyta to open the portals to all these burning houses. Take this massive influx of folks that were about to burn up. Their remains are never going to be found. Let's be honest. In a fire like that, you don't find much other than teeth. And I brought this up last time. And then taking the Planet 504 or somewhere else. You know, there's, once you have opened up the plot like they did, I found it very, very frustrating that people were still playing Monopoly when they were basically role-playing games.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is that it could have gotten so expansive. It could have gotten so expansive that, you know, they wouldn't have been able to. I mean, the thing is, if they went to Planet 504, like, how do you end the series at that point? Because you could do anything there. I mean, I guess that's the whole thing. We want it to be a longer series. I mean, the one thing I was happy about is that they brought Gian back. Mm-hmm. And it was like, they brought her back for real. It wasn't just some, like, you know, halfway character. I mean, that's the thing too. Like, Gian could be her. She could be a whole spinoff by herself. She could be a whole spinoff by herself. I could almost take her character back to the some late 80s show where she's a detective agency.
She's a detective
in Los Angeles. But she can't. She's got
San Francisco.
She's got one superpower or something like that. I could totally see. I can see Jiang being a show. That to me is a show that I would watch and I want to happen. And I think I read somewhere saying she did, you know, this show actually did give her some, the person who plays the character was like, I decided to write my own show. And I think it got picked up. So whatever she's doing, I'm following that. So, because I'm interested in that.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah. But I like that they brought that character back in a real way. And I think people don't really view it as a thing, but I like the kind of like multiracial, and something beyond just black and white paradigm.
Yeah.
I like the fact that, you know, she came back to kind of like help and assist.
When she was invited, embraced, and made welcome after the first surprise, we're here. The other thing, though, is I commented when her character is used before, the Bechdel test. Do you have two women character in the movie that are friends that talk about something other than the male lead? And, okay, they just barely passed the test in this episode. They just did. They had them singing. in the car. So that made me very happy. It made me also happy that they're using this, but there is some real danger involved with her. The character is one sexy time away from disappearing and becoming the spirit again, a disembodied spirit again. So this is kind of interesting. I've read some of the other legends, she's got to make it, 3 years without having sex, and then she becomes the individual. But once again, what about the daughter? Well, we've learned that the mother has passed, so that's not as big an issue, but you have this spirit now. If she can make it 3 years...
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an important thing. It's like, if she can make it 3 years, she can, but I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of beside the point. I think that, you know, one thing that was kind of sad in the show, Ruby does die in the show. That's what, so far Christina says, and Ruby dies trying to help Letty. But I think one thing I want to say is I feel that Letty has been given a bad rap.
Yes.
She's viewed as this kind of like, I don't want to say she's like not necessarily slut shame, but I feel that there's a lot of kind of animosity towards Letty. Oh, you know, she didn't come to her mother's funeral. Oh, she's just, you know, partying all the time. Oh, you know, it's, you know, she's a troublemaker. She doesn't treat her sister right. And there's kind of like, I feel like there's this, you know, even with Tick, it's like, you know, she doesn't get the wine and dine the way Jiang does. She doesn't get any of the, she gets almost no credit for all the things that she's done. It's just, you know, it's almost like this, you know, this black woman mule character. And I think a lot of people also were waiting for this kind of colorist shooter drop, like for them to mention it in regards to the fact that, oh, she was light and her sister was dark. But the thing is that there are black families where there's a sister that's lighter and a sister that's darker, and that's really not always brought up. I mean, there are some people out there that have families that are pathologized or they have like issues, and that is brought up all the time. But, you know, in my family, we had people of all different shades, and it was literally never, ever brought up in some really, you know, bizarre way, not in regards to a negative. And so I think, you know, I think on the internet, I heard, and the thing is that it's so funny because Jack has no idea what I'm talking about, but like within black people land, I feel that people were kind of like waiting for this issue in regards to the colorism to come out. Okay. And then that wasn't it. And I also too, I felt because of that colorist issue, it was like, oh, already Letty was the bad girl because, oh, Letty was the light skinned one with privilege and with light skin privilege. And Ruby is the one that's working hard and all. And I mean, maybe I'm going way too into that, but I felt a little vibe of that.
The thing that I'm wondering about is this. Were the writers consciously writing this as how Letty would have been treated in the 1950s? Because I'm just watching the character, and I guess as 21st century digital boy right here, I'm watching going, what's wrong with this person? She's a photographer and she's working for civil rights, you know. Why are we hating her? She's in control of her life. And then you've got that whole discussion about the family, and the one that I found, you know, really frustrating is it's revealed that the mom was a very manipulative person. And I didn't see, I saw subtle manipulations, but I didn't see really gross ones. And I'm noticing everyone's treating her like crap. I'm like, good Lord, is this how it really was?
Yeah, maybe, I'm just saying, yeah. Maybe what we're seeing and we're viewing it as like, oh, wow, that's kind of messed up what you're doing. But maybe the issue wasn't so much, maybe they're just kind of like writing how that character would experience life in the 50s. If you're kind of an independent black woman and you don't want to have traditional job, our traditional role as a, you know, an assistant or as a person who's like on the side.
She's on the church choir and organizes the Sunday potluck dinners.
Well, I just thought about, you know, I had just finished reading the autobiography on Lucy Parsons, The Goddess of Anarchy. Just so you know, I really did not like the book by Dr. Jones.
Get it from the library.
Get it from the library or steal it from the library.
No, you got to put it.
So it's, you know, it's very, I was saying how, you know, Lucy Parsons was treated, and I was wondering kind of that same kind of a thing with Letty. Like, you know, this kind of like, well, you know, you're not in your role, and you could just be, you could just have this easy life. You could just be the wife of some Black person of status, mm-hmm. And be kind of like that arm candy, and you're refusing to accept your role. So I thought maybe it was something like that.
I don't know.
On
some level, though, we have a society of bon vivants that are celebrated. I mean, go back a two episodes when Hippolyta is in Paris with Josephine Baker. And that's 1920s. So Josephine's okay, but Letty, three decades later, isn't. I mean, yeah, there was the clampdown that came up in the 50s that clamped down a lot of life, and you were discussing this in your discussion on the end of Reconstruction and the clampdown that came after that. But still, you've got this liberated individual that's celebrated, has been celebrated for decades, and she gets a pass, she gets the hall pass, but other people get into detention.
You have to die. You have to die or leave the country in order to get your wilted flowers. But to kind of reference one of my things, essay that I wrote, and I forgot where I put that. Oh, I think I put it in Lucy Parsons, my book review, mm-hmm. of the Lucy Parsons Goddess of Anarchy book. But, you know, moving on, you know, they finally, you know, help Diana or help Dee.
Dee, yeah.
And her mother actually gives her a book, gives her a comic that's actually printed, like her, mm-hmm. comic. And she's like, oh my gosh. And the thing that's funny is that it is Afua Richardson. And I actually took a picture with her in Comic-Con. So I have a picture with the person that was referenced in Lovecraft. So now I have a Lovecraft connection.
You know, it's kind of a sad. Last weekend was when New York Comic Con was supposed to be. We saw her at the prior 2019 Comic Con. And I'm sure that if they had had Comic Con this year, she would have been in the artist alley with those comic books. And, you know, and that would have been kind of the treasure to get. You know, can you get one of those? I'm sure she's got them. In fact, we should look that up.
We did. I looked it up, and she does. She actually, I think she has them on her site. And so I'm really
buy it now.
It was just kind of interesting, and I was so happy for her. I'm like, oh wow, because she was such a nice person, and I could see how she could be on Planet 504. Teaching people how to draw. That's totally like something that I could actually see happening. I mean, she kind of has that whole like, I'm from somewhere else vibe, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
She was so friendly. And she, when she was put her arm around you and took the photo, you know how some fan photos, you can see the person is dying a little death inside every time they have to feign. She wasn't feigning at all. She was happy to see you.
Yes. So she's, like I said, so that was really cute. And, you know, and she gave her this book, and then she came back, and we didn't realize, we thought her arm was fixed, but it was her arm, Diana's arm wasn't necessarily fixed. It was a robotic arm. Mm-hmm. And you said that it was referencing a role-playing game that you played.
Okay. This is something that is kind of funny. When I went to the Wikipedia page discussing this, what popped up was Johnny Silverhand. In the 19, late 1980s, early 1990s, there was a role-playing game called Cyberpunk 2020. Actually, it started out Cyberpunk 2010, but then 2010 came up real fast. The competitor of it was a game called Shadowrun. Some of you are aware of what I'm talking about. Some of you aren't, and don't worry too much about it. The point is it's set in a dystopian future in which cybernetics have become so advanced that you can do things like, oh, you lost your arm in some sort of accident. Oh, we just attached this metal one, and it's even better than your flesh. And this becomes one of the big issues, is people choosing to replace their flesh with cybernetics. So she's got this hand, and I suddenly had, oh my God, this is Johnny Silverhand. And if you remember also, though, Atticus says that a woman gives him the book with a robotic arm, gives him a book and pushes him back. Was this D? That may be the case. So she was in a cloak. She might have been. This might be another wraparound full circle in which...
Well, I definitely think that's exactly who it was and what happened. I guess another thing is that, you know, I have this thing against the whole dystopian future. Mm-hmm. And because I feel that it's a trope. I'm not going to say it's a trope. To me, it is very white supremacist. It's very patriarchy. Of course, you know, if you're a white man who's able-bodied, you would love the whole idea of a dystopian each person for himself, because especially if you have more guns and you're bigger and you can run and you have more land and you have more food, because in that kind of a atmosphere, yeah, you're going to win because you can just win with power. Yeah. So of course, you know, certain people are going to be pushing that. But I feel that, you know, for me, you know, as a Black woman, I'm not, you know, I don't believe that the only way for us to get to a better life is to copy the words and the ways of dead white men. And I think that that's, you know, even in fiction, I find that people continue to do that trope. And I'm not trying to think that was happening here. I think one thing, when I was kind of, you know, okay, if they got the magic. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the challenges is kind of like, you got the magic and you just, you know, what did you do with the magic? I mean, I was glad, you know, when they got the magic and they saved their family with the magic. Another thing that happened is, I am kind of confused about, I'm not confused about the Ruby situation. I realized what happened was that Ruby never did really like Christina, but I guess she thought she was going to play her for a moment. Yeah. Like she was going to play Christina the way Christina played her.
Well, Christina set up a trap. She wanted to test Ruby, and so she put out the blood. This is from me. I had to make it. She told, and she knew that something was up. So she laid a trap, and Ruby walked right on into it.
Yes. I mean, as I always said, and I know you don't agree with me, I said Ruby continues to lack imagination and to be really, you know, I like her as a person, but she reminds me of so many people that I know that are just like, wow, how'd you get trapped by that? Like, you do all these things, you're so talented, but yet you're so basic in some ways. And I hate saying that word, but, you know, that's something that would happen to Ruby. That's something that happens to people like her all the time. Right. I work really hard, 9 to 5. It's like, do you think anything would come for you that easy? Of course not. Of course, yeah. You know.
We should add in, you did a great review on the, what was that book? No Pay?
Can't Pay, Won't Pay.
And this is one of the troubles they're having with lower middle class and working class folks trying to live the American dream. They can't. They're not making enough. And in order to build up any property, they have to have access to property, which they're never going to get because of all sorts of of barriers in their way, and it affects their ultimately their credit scores, which means that they can't get the loans, which means, or if they do, they get in one that's usurious.
Well, I mean, the thing is, there's almost this whole, what happened with Christina and Ruby was almost symbolic of that whole debt cycle and how she couldn't get out of it. She was like, just one more thing, and I'll get out of the situation. I'll get one more thing. And the thing is that, you know, like the United States, the house always wins. And I know that people are, you know, I think another thing is challenging is because, again, this is another kind of a queer character that kind of meets their fate, meets their maker, which is another challenging thing about this show. I wish there were so many LGBTQ characters in the show. I wish one character had been able to find love and worked out. Like, I mean, the thing is that we still have Montrose. Maybe he could have a boyfriend or something like that, but it would have been nice. I mean, the thing is that, you know, of course with Letty and Tick, that also doesn't work out. So it's not like, oh, well, the heterosexual couple worked out. It didn't work out. Yeah. Didn't actually work out with anybody. So, I mean, in my own head, I'm like, oh, you know, it's too bad that none of the LGBTQ characters worked out. But you know what? It's almost like everybody in the show Black, nothing good happened to them. It's almost like a good time situation. Even when they won, they still lost. And it was, I mean, I know people were trying to, you know, people, I mean, like I said, it was satisfying in some ways. In some ways it was satisfying because the things that you always want to happen at the end of these shows, when you want the bad guy to get theirs, and we'll get into that later, that actually happened, which is kind of bizarre because that almost never happens. But in a way, I didn't like how it happened.
Yeah.
Because again, it's kind of going to this whole dystopian, this like white male.
The bad guy has to lose at the end.
Well, I don't like the kind of like this white male trope. Like, okay, so we're gonna get to do a show, and the thing is that when I was a writer, when I wrote like some of my first short stories, I really did kind of take on the persona of a white man when I wrote a lot of the things that I wrote, and they were kind of like, well, look, you know, white guys, they write things and they're violent and they're doing all this stuff. Wouldn't it be great if I could write something like that? But, you know, I'll just make the characters Black, but they'll still be violent. They'll still be horrible. They'll still be doing all these horrible, awful things, but they'll be Black. So it's kind of like, I'm like, what does that do exactly? You know, I have my own experiences. I don't have to necessarily, and I'm not saying that this was happening with this show necessarily. I'm saying that, because I mean, like I said, I love the choices that, you know, the little details of Black life. That was wonderful in regards to what she showed. I loved, you know, the Gian character. I loved the character of the mother and daughter, kind of like Wonder Woman character. Yeah.
Well, that was something else I wanted to bring up, kind of on the last one, and I forgot. You know, when Letty gets that mark of Cain, she is literally Wonder Woman. Think about it. Wonder Woman has to at least hit the braces, and if they miss it, the bullet, you know, hurts you. But she actually is Wonder Woman. And so kind of watching that and thinking, there's some interesting things going on. But we should actually talk about the differences in the progression of the plot of the book versus the movie. And where I had some troubles and you had some troubles, and some of them are shared and some of them aren't. But if we look at should I go over the book briefly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The book ends with a raid on the Chicago group trying to steal some papers, and where they trick William, not Christina, William, is that they strip them of their power, and then they use the pages they'd captured before to cast a spell that makes William sick whenever he deals with magic, and then they literally drive him out of town and say, hey, you know, he can't go near any black cities. Now, that some people would say, oh, geez, for all the things that they've done, you know, why would you let him do this? And this kind of comes back to our discussion earlier where we were saying, if you really want to run a great villain, the villain has to think that they're the hero.
Yeah, and I think that was a problem with Christina, is that Christina, I think she knew she was wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the problem, is that Christina knew she was wrong. And I mean, and maybe this is, you know, and this could be twofold. You know, the thing about like racism and white people and monsters and all this stuff is that there's two schools of thought. One is that, you know, white people have no idea what they're doing. They're just doing their life and they're just whatever.
Playing by the rules.
They're playing by the rules and this is what happens. And there's a school of thought is that white people know exactly what they're doing and they, you know, they're just playing like they don't understand and they don't know. I have went through from my point in my life where at one point I really did think that white people did not know. As I've gotten older, I've come to find out most white people who have the power totally know what they're doing. And that could be the reason why. And I think the thing is so, you know, interesting about you, Jack, is that, you know, you're from the Midwest. And I think certain things I've told you before in the past, you think you're very kind of like, whoa, I'm not saying that you don't know that people are this way, but I don't know if you are fully understanding or still have the same perspective that I have, where I am 100% sure that all of the horrible things that happen to black people, colonized people, I am 100% sure that at least the people at the top of the food chain, I am 100% sure they know exactly what they are doing.
It's and the ones so, in the middle that...
The ones in the middle are kind of like iffy, but the thing is that there's not that many people in the middle. I mean, that's the whole thing. If they make it, they try to make it seem the middle person is the top person.
Yeah.
And so maybe that was the whole thing. Maybe in the book, William's the middle guy. And in the TV show, Christine is the top person. I don't know if that what makes it different.
I think, kind of going back to the book, William, as you know, slips the note, and his justification was initially Atticus didn't deserve this, and his dad was going to blow himself up anyways. Let's just prevent him from doing one more crime. And then on some level, William had this idea that, hey, we're now best buddies and we're going to work together. And at the very end of the book, when they're running him out of town, he's like, what? But we did all this stuff together. I've given you all these things. You know, why are you treating me this way? So, you know, on some level, once again, William thinks of himself as the hero. Whereas Christina is kind of going through and saying, oh, I need all of your blood. You know, this has been planned. And kind of going back to my big criticism of the show is Christina, you're playing this long game. The book that was destroyed is now back. And you're still going to go for a short term? No. If you truly are this nasty, evil person, you know, you're going to do something better than this. The family, our heroes are incredibly valuable. They're learning on their own. Mm-hmm. Here's what a truly good villain does: is they bring them in, and she didn't. Maybe she's a bad villain, or maybe it's just that the writers wanted to wrap this up for thing 10, but they could have had a season 2.
But I actually said, I actually liked the end of the book better than the end of this show. And the thing is that, you know, we both had an issue with, you know, the thing is this, is that to me, you get magic. You get this magic. And to me, the point of the magic, and they were like, okay, white people can't use magic anymore. That's one of the things. That's fine. But then you go and then you have the character act like do something that a white person would do. I understand people wanted to be satisfied and they wanted
Christina to die.
I get that. But I did not like that Diana did it. I did not like that that was, I just felt like it could have been done in a different way. It could have been, this is what happens in superhero movies, where they kill the villain at the end. Yeah. That is what happens, and this is a comic book type ending, and that's fine. That might have been what they were aiming for, a comic book, but I don't like superhero comic books, because that means that, you know, your whole life's dependent on one person. It's not a community. You don't get to decide. One person doesn't get to decide to kill a person and become the judge and jury.
Yeah.
This is a bad precedent. I mean, of course, this is a fictional work. And like I said, we always kind of, you know, I know, like, in a lot of shows, you know, Black people don't win. We're always the one that ends up dying. I get that we're always mm-hmm. the ones that end up dying. So sometimes it was probably, it was kind of a cathartic type thing to have
the reverse.
To have the reverse. And I understand that. But to me, you know, the point of fiction is not necessarily to do, well, I'm going to show that we can do what white people can do. I don't view that as some kind of progress. And I'm not saying that this is just wholesale that, because there were a lot of other things in it, but it's just like the finality of her just killing Diana, killing Christine. And I just don't understand how Diana got to the point where she'd be able to kill somebody at this point.
I think if you're angry enough, but there's other things as well. And this is one of the things I liked about it is, and it was more in the book, but in this, at least there was some ambiguity of it. Yeah, we hated Christina, but let's be honest. Christina saved Dee's life. And she repaid her with death. And they're basically making the child into the killer. I don't know if I like that. When I was a little boy, there were times where I was hurt by my peers and I was really, really angry at them and I fantasized doing horrible things. I'm glad I didn't do that. Some of those people changed.
Yeah, that is true, but Christina was not going to change. I think the thing is that for me, I wouldn't have mind if Christina had met her fate. I just didn't want Dee I just didn't want to be Dee who did it.
Yeah.
And not necessarily like that. It's just, I don't know. I felt that was kind of unfair to make her character do it. You know, it would have made sense if Atticus had done it. But of course Atticus was dead, so he couldn't do it.
Montrose or
Letty or someone else. I mean, I don't know. But I felt that to have Diana do it was...
The neat thing was the book actually had a nice solution. And the solution would have been an interesting parallel. If you remember in the book, when Hippolyta goes to the ends of the universe, she comes to a house where, I'm trying to remember the name, it was one of the Braithwrights had sent their servants when they realized that the servants had let the son run away with the maid.
Mm-hmm.
There's your possibility. You just send her to the edge of the universe and she can watch there and she can never make her way back because she won't have magic and she'll just be there. Or even dump her in 504 and 200 years later, she might be a good person. I don't know, but there were options and they took the easy, fuck yeah, answer out, which is kill her, kill her, kill her. And it's just, I'm now middle-aged and I'm tired of the just kill them answer because it just, one, it never seems to happen to the people that are truly evil, and two, all it does is give you some temporary, I don't want to say, yeah, Schadenfreude. It's kind of like Schadenfreude. And what do you get from that?
Yes, I mean, this is, you know, exactly. Like I said, I, you know, this was actually one of the more satisfying finales from a series, most of the time you're disappointed. I know. People are so angry about Game of Thrones. They like didn't even like during Comic-Con, no one was even at their top, like their finale, like top, right? Just like you could just go die or whatever. We don't care what happens to you.
There were more Good Omens costumes, which was a very nice series, but not as well known. Then there were
Game of Thrones. People were so angry, even though that show ended this way it was supposed to. She was not a nice person, so sorry, that's how it works. She
torched a city.
Yeah, so that's what happens to you when you torch a city. You get killed by the person.
Ideally, someone that's just.
Somebody needs to take you out.
You from doing that again. Yeah, and had full intention. She announced full intention to do that.
Yeah.
And so, I understand. Going back to Game of Thrones, Daenerys was a Cinderella story, rags to riches. And very charismatic, but wow, watch out for them. They will always get you in trouble.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not that we're saying you're always not supposed to die. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying the way this character did die, and who did it just didn't seem right. It didn't fit right. But the thing is that, there are a lot of, we don't know. I don't know if this is the end.
No, it's the end, unfortunately.
It's going to be the end, and
that would have been a reason to keep Justina around. Was they could have this? They've got a wonderful universe right now, and they just brought it full circle. This could have done a season 2 easily, a season 3 easily. I think afterwards you might start running short on things, but at least there was the way they expanded it. With the inclusion of the backstory of Gia, that made me realize that the group that they had the ability to add in a meaningful way to this body of literature, the body of literature, this story, and not just be padding. So they drew it to a conclusion. I think they did it too shortly. I think that they made a child a killer. And I think they sold themselves short. And kind of going back to it, I think this is the main criticism that you and I have over this, is that all the characters, in some sense, sold themselves short. And maybe that was intentional to make you think not to do that, but...
I think in a way is something that I'm almost kind of like, I wonder, like, is she trying to give you a lesson? Like, don't sell yourself short. Like, these are all the things you could have done. You had magic, you had this book, you had all this stuff. This is the choices that you made. Mm-hmm. It could have been that. It could have been like this bigger message in that way. Because the thing is that if I were teaching this in, say, a high school class, I don't know if anybody would let you do that. Okay, how about a freshman college class?
Then you can show sexy times.
A college freshman class. I mean, I would totally use this. And I would use this as kind of like to show, like, what do you think this means? I mean, the thing is that it's complicated enough. And it's simple enough, and it leaves enough for you to have a deeper conversation. And it kind of, and I'm wondering, with Misha, I'm wondering, is she trying to say a bigger message? Like, you have all of this, and this is what you did with it. And like I said, it I'm not disappointed. So I want to say that first off, I'm not disappointed. I'm very happy with I'm happy with the series. I'm happy. I wanted the ending to end differently, but I'm not the writer. But it's not like, oh, I'm disappointed. I felt let down. She did give me exactly who she told Misha Green told me who she was when she started the series. I shouldn't believe, that's what they say. She told me who she was when she started the series. So
what,
I should
do you mean?
It's a kind of a joke when, okay, it's like a kind of a black saying. If someone tells you who they are, believe them.
Okay.
So you don't get don't get all like surprised. Like I told you I was a snake. I told you I did. I'm not saying that Misha Green's a snake, but I'm saying this is consistent with what's been happening through the show. So it's not like, oh, this is totally out of the writing character. Yeah. This was the show. This ended the way it was supposed to. Had it ended the way we wanted to, it would have been weird. It would have been some other writer or creator doing the show. Yeah. So like I said, Misha Green told us who she was, and so we can't get mad about the ending.
Yeah. Well, I think you pointed this out either earlier or during a conversation we had while we were watching it. These things are made for a particular audience. And this is something that I think a lot of people don't realize, is that most things are by the numbers. You brought that up in the past, where you as a teenage girl sat in all those romantic comedies and you got to vote on...
I'm from Hollywood, California, just to kind of make sense of that. I used to go to... They used to have me bring me down to Paramount Studios and we would watch movies and we would say if how movies would end. And we'd always say that they should end with the cute guy, the girl should get the cute guy, and that's how it should end. Or the guy should be nicer too, or whatever. Like yeah. The cute guy should be nicer. I mean, the thing is that a lot of these things end and they're crafted for a specific audience.
Yep.
And, you know, you're not going to have certain kind of thinking because you have to hit a general audience.
Audience, yeah.
And so just for marketing reasons. And so what you really want to do, maybe you can't actually do because...
That. You gotta end with a celebration with a Journey song and a big crane shot pulling away. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what it did. It's like I felt like, they're walking with the body of Tick, like, don't stop believing. I mean, that literally was... what happened, you know, or like Goonies for Life. I mean, that was kind of, you know.
Or Tears for Fears, everyone wants to rule the world as Professor Hathaway's house explodes from the popcorn bomb.
Yeah. But I mean, with that, we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
Well, going back to my desires, I think that for future times, once you open that box of magic, don't limit yourself. You can do a lot more. And I guess some of the fun of going back and watching Doctor Who is that sometimes the writers actually got it good. You've got a time machine. You've got a world machine. You've got magic. You can do a lot more. For future folks writing things like this, the world of magic is a lot more interesting than just getting a job at Macy's or Marshall Field's.
I think that's one of the best lessons is that, if you get some magic, the first thing you shouldn't try to do is get your dream job.
Maybe
you don't need a job because you have magic. Think a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. So. That I think that's a lesson to this show. If you learn how to do magic, the first thing you do is you shouldn't probably get a job in Marshall Field's.
Yeah.
that to me was Ruby's downfall. Had she not done that, she could have had a whole other life. She might still be alive right now.
Well, once again, the whole thinking big versus thinking small. And once you've got magic, once you have the potential to roam the universe, don't waste it on a short-term goal.
Yeah.
You know, going back, I said this before, but it still irritates me. You got the book. Oh, no, I'm not going to share it. Had they shared the stupid book, Atticus and Ruby and Christina would all be alive. Now, it wouldn't be as exciting as an ending, and you wouldn't have the, yeah, we got the bad girl. Oh, we lost the hero.
People would be mad at you right now.
Yeah, well.
They would have been mad.
It'd be anticlimactic. But, here's something that's kind of fun. Go onto YouTube and look for a fake trailer for a fake horror movie called Hell No, in which all the characters make intelligent decisions. And so no one dies. Everyone survives. You know, and
everybody has a cell phone.
Everyone has a cell phone. 911 and
yeah. We have there've been no horror films ever made. It was for cell phones and good, just better decisions.
Okay. One of the things that we're trying to do with Public Intellectuals Radios is to try and get beyond the obvious choices and thinking in the box. And this is why I think this series has so intrigued me. You've got magic. You've got a universe machine. What would you do with that? Think bigger. And why I enjoyed this show, as you pointed out, if we really thought big, people might be unhappy because the villain, oh, she's now immortal and she's living on planet 10 with everything she'd ever want. Oh, she's supposed to be punished. Are we really, really going to be limited by the smallness of punishment when there's so much potential for growth?
Exactly. Thanks for that. All right. But with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for listening to our podcast.
Have a good night.
Yes. This is Public Intellectual Radio's podcast.